The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed, and we are presented to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Derek and I are back here for Raised by Wolves, and we have a guest in studio with us, which is, we love all our guests, but when we can get a guest in studio, it's always a good time. John Meyer from Canis Hoopas is here. What's up?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Glad you're feeling better.
Yes. I'm sorry. I had to bail on the last
A little week. Under the weather?
Yeah. I was a little sick.
But we're a forgiving show, so we figured we'd try it again, and we're glad it's happening.
And I thank you for that.
I mean, so much to get into with you. I mean...
Sounds personal.
Well... yeah, I mean, it. I guess... Where do we start? It's amazing that this team is 18-13 as we're taping this on a night that on a Wednesday night that they're getting ready to play the Denver Nuggets. 18-13, fourth seed in the West, first place in the division. Not that divisions mean a whole lot in the NBA. But yet everybody is just on pins and needles.
Everyone's
and
tense.
They're just everybody's tense and everybody's complaining and. And certainly there's a lot of reasons to be, pessimistic, I guess. There's reasons to be worried and concerned and to be complaining. But, I mean, this is a franchise that has not made the playoffs in 13 years, and now they're having a winning season, and they're in the – if the playoffs started today, they would have home court advantage in the first round, and everybody is just losing their –
Everyone's
you know
miserable.
What. Yeah. Have you experienced anything like this?
Of course. It seems like the Timberwolves are playing terrible basketball by a lot of the commentary. I think we're seeing kind of the product of just great expectations.
Yeah.
Everyone really thought this team was going to be, an elite team in the Western Conference. Me personally, I'm really happy with 18-13.
Me too.
I understand the criticisms,
yeah.
And I think a lot of them are fair,
yep.
For sure. But I do think we are a lot of people. The conversations we're thinking like. It's we can see the ceiling on all of this already, which I think is wrong. I don't think we can see the ceiling on this.
Right.
But we're worried because we can see down the line the minutes becoming an issue. Injuries. We can see injuries potentially happening. We can see just things going wrong, I think, with this team. And so I think that's what is worrying people. But, for me, my first season I covered the Timberwolves, they went 16-66. I try not to forget about that team.
What do you make of Andrew Wiggins? Because he has, it seems like he has gotten, and certainly he has struggled, particularly on the offensive end the last few weeks. And he has gotten the brunt of the criticism, and I think a lot of the criticism has been fair. But what do you make of the struggles that he's having right now and how does he get out of this funk? I mean, is it as simple as just continue to do what he's doing and just you're hoping that the shots start to fall more? Or is there a major adjustment that he needs to make going forward here?
Yeah, I think that's the number one question right now for a lot of us Wolves fans and people following the team is how does Wiggins get out of this? He's in a horrible shooting slump.
Yeah.
You look at his numbers across the board, he's having the worst season of his career. I think the only positive thing you can say about him is for the first time of his career, he's also a plus 3.8 on the court, which is great, but that's largely a product of Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson and Jeff Teague. But how does he get out of it? I don't really know. I think I expect him, to regress to the mean. I think a lot of these shots are going to start going soon enough. If he scores 40 tonight in Denver, is that the start of now a hot shooting streak? I don't
right.
know. I think what a lot of us would like to see is, and this has always been the thing with Wiggins, it's you can't just score 18, 20 points and grab one rebound and get two assists or get one steal. When he's not shooting, we need to see him hitting the glass more, grab five rebounds. We need to see him create more, pass more, not just settle for those mid-range jumpers. I'd like to think that he's adjusting. I think he's kind of experiencing you know, with this brand new team coming together, I think it has probably hit Wiggins the hardest, just figuring out his new role. Something that could help him in my mind is, and that could help the Wolves as a whole, is just to play with better pace. They play so slow.
Yeah.
And Wiggins, I think he's really fast, and obviously we see the bounce. And, you know, Ricky's not here to throw them those lobs anymore, but I think Jeff Teague can do that. And if they could just push a little more in transition, I think that could help his scoring a lot because he's so good in those areas.
Is the ball movement part of that too? Because, I mean, we can see a lot of times, and, you know, and I like Jeff Teague, but we can see sometimes he gets a little bit dribble happy and the ball kind of sticks. And
yeah.
You're saying, Jeff, move the ball.
Well, he does get paid by the dribble. So you understand why he dribbles as long as he does sometimes.
Yeah, I jokingly tweeted the other night that I die a little bit inside every time Teague passes up a three-point shot and he proceeds to dribbling for like 8 seconds, or and then they find a crappier shot. And I think, you know, Teague does have a tendency to over-dribble, and that doesn't help Wiggins, you know, in terms of setting him up. I think Towns has seen this too, is that Ricky, it's like they were so spoiled with him at point guard because he just got them such good looks. You know, and Ricky has his downfalls, obviously, too. And Teague is a better shooter than him. He's a better finisher. Those things are great. But I think Wiggins and Towns are experiencing kind of that life without Ricky. You don't get those easy looks. The Timberwolves as a whole, I think they go through, you know, sometimes they share the ball and it looks so beautiful. The ball movement's great. And then they go through these periods of time where it's just ISO ball, more likely in the fourth, that it's really bad. And Wiggins does have a tendency to just sit in the corner or just stand around. And he needs to be a better backdoor cutter. He needs to get out in transition, like I said. There are ways I think they can help him instead of just give it a mid-post ISO touch, get him a mid-range jumper. It seems like they're asking him to create so much by himself instead of being a part of the whole team and getting easy buckets, which maybe that's just how the Timberwolves are designed.
I just think one thing that we saw, you know, early on in his career that, you know, he'd attack the basket, he'd have that spin move where he'd split two defenders, and he either got the foul call or he got the layup, where he's actually excellent inside. I mean, this season he's shooting 71% at the rim, 45.5% within 10 feet of the rim. So he's very good inside, and we just haven't seen that sort of tenacity. Because in his first couple of years, you were looking at him like, all right, well, this guy's going to be in the top 10 for free throw attempts every year, and that has not happened under Tom Thibodeau. And we saw that the other night when we saw it again. He charges through the lane, right into two defenders, spin move, and gets the and one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the Wiggins that we need to see. So even if he's not getting those easy looks and those lobs and, you know, just attack and stay aggressive, because good things can happen. And, you know, I mean, he's not shooting the free throw particularly well, but I think that's something that he still has to keep going to and finding ways to keep himself engaged and not relying as much on other people to get him involved. And I think maybe that's one thing with Ricky Rubio too, is that you don't have to create as much for yourself. You know, as long as you're in the right position, or you know, you have a couple inches, Rubio's going to find you. But most times in the NBA, you're going to have to create chances for yourself and at least do your part.
Yeah. And the Timberwolves just, we play slow.
Yeah.
Like, that's my big criticism I have for Tibbs. We just play too slow.
I wish they would play a lot faster.
Yeah. I would like to see them push the tempo way more. And it's something that I think could help Wiggins a lot. I also think that, you know, there's not like a stat for this, but just from watching the games, when Wiggins has momentum going to the hoop, he's way better.
Yeah.
And too many of his touches that he gets right now, he doesn't have momentum. You know, how do you create that? I don't know. Run some high PNR with him, maybe. He runs no high PNR on this team. Think of last year. Think of Point Wiggins. That was like all we talked about last year.
Yeah.
Have you seen that this year?
No.
I
can't even remember. I mean, it was a little bit in Miami, like early in the season when we were going to him in crunch time, but we haven't seen Point Wiggins a lot, and not that I'm advocating for that, but I think it could help him kind of maybe get out of this little, well, not even a little, this huge slump that he's in. It's really bad.
What can Jimmy Butler do to help him? Because kind of to your point about, you know, with Point Wiggins, Jimmy has the ball in his hand so much now, and he's sort of being kind of the de facto, I mean, between him and Teague, they're kind of the de facto facilitators and playmakers, and Wiggins has been sort of regulated to just a guy who just stands there, and if he's open for a three, they'll kick it to him and he'll take the shot and hopefully it goes in. But otherwise, he's not getting involved. So does Jimmy need to scale back on some of the just the ball dominance that he has to try and help Wiggins get involved?
I think it's an amazing point. I think that would help. because Jimmy is Butler is a great corner three shooter.
Yeah.
From both sides, he's outstanding. I don't have the numbers handy, but I know he's really good. And so, would you rather Jimmy take a corner three, or would you rather Andrew take a corner three?
Right.
You know, I think the answer is pretty obvious. But then you have the then you get to the question. You know, Butler is so good with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
He's obviously better than Wiggins with the ball in his hands. So I think it's just they're working through it. That was, we all knew this was going to take some time for them to mesh and for them to come together. And you know, Wiggins has been pretty awful, and I think he's really experiencing this new team like negatively. He's taking the brunt of it the most. And I don't know. I hope he can get out of it, but I don't think people should. You know, now that he's making $148 million, I don't think people should hold back.
And I just pulled this up, actually, not to, to go back to the pace conversation. Tom Thibodeau's last season in Chicago, the Bulls were 23rd in pace, which was 2015. 2014, they were 29th. So I think at any rate, you're probably looking at a bottom 10 team in pace in terms of, unless Tom Thibodeau, you know, completely changes his stripes, which is kind of tough.
What were they in, can you go back to 2011, which was Derrick Rose's MVP year? I'd be curious to see what their pace was then, too.
And they're 21st right now, which I think is an improvement, shockingly, over last year. I think which I don't even know how that's possible, but it's just something I sit there and I watch the team, and I just wish they would play faster, because I think Towns and Wiggins and Butler, it just caters to those guys. But
and Teague seems like a guy, too, that could really thrive in a more up-tempo offensive
Because I think Teague just tends to get in these modes where he just starts to think too much, you know, when he has the ball, those situations when he gets it and he just stares at the rim instead of just shooting it when he doesn't have a defender within 7 feet. Or, you know, he dribbles too much and he kind of thinks about taking that shot, but maybe he finds something else, you know, if he just dribbles around a little bit. Yeah, I think the more chances you can create for Teague to have to think less and just rely on his instinct, because he's a smart basketball player, he has talent. I think the more that you just play to that, the better. But so 2011, they were 23rd in pace.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's just to play devil's advocate to myself. It's easy for me just to say, Timberwolves, play with better pace, play faster. You have to get stops defensively.
Yes.
To play up tempo. So, you know, and the defense plays a big part in that too. But it's something that I think they can improve on. It when it would certainly help Wiggins.
What do you think the issue is defensively? I mean, we know that, you know, Towns has had his struggles defensively where he just sort of gets, I mean, how many times have we seen Cat just get like caught in the middle of the paint and he's not really doing anything? And you're like, Cat, what are you doing? You know, and then, you know, Wiggins obviously has his moments where he just has lapses and he's not really paying attention to what he needs to be doing. But so we have that, but how do you fix it? What can they do to get better, you know, to get more stops?
More Jimmy Butler defensive soliloquies like he gave after the Portland game.
Yes.
He spent 5 minutes just raving about defense and how much he loves to play defense.
And like you never hear players say that stuff.
No.
Like they never, players, NBA players, they don't want to talk
about
defense.
Here's the reason why, is because Jimmy is just Tibbs' mouthpiece.
Yeah.
He just says what he's the player, Tibbs. So it was interesting to me after the Portland game. He actually, you know, he has talked about defense. He's bemoaned the defense all season long. But after the Portland game, he actually said Wiggins and Towns. He actually mentioned them.
Yeah.
Which to me is an interesting thing to just keep an eye on. It's just, And I don't think those guys are going to take it the wrong way or anything.
I feel like they have those conversations behind closed doors anyway,
exactly.
And they know it's not personal.
But it's not like coded language anymore. Like, you know, the effort isn't there. We gotta try harder in this
the
area
young
of the game.
Guys.
It's like, well, he's actually saying, you know,
we can't take plays off. I heard him. I heard him drop that too.
And I think he's right. I mean, I do think they take plays off, and they can't do that. Not if this team wants to improve. I think they're 25th in defensive rating. Tibbs was brought in here to make the Timberwolves a good defensive team.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to ask yourself, if he isn't making the Timberwolves a good defensive team, then how exactly is he doing his job to really maximize this talent? I think that's a question. We have to look at that. Nobody is free from criticism. So it's interesting. I think one you know, how do they fix it? I don't know. I'd be working next to Tibbs if I knew how to fix it. But the easiest answer to me is that Towns just figures it out defensively. Because you go to these games, and like Tibbs always says, you can see 60 to 70 pick and rolls in a game. And when you put Teague and Towns in a pick and roll, it's a nightmare. We all know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's not good. Those guys don't know how to guard P&R. And so I think the rest of the league knows that. The film is out there. And so they just keep pushing on it and hitting it and hitting it and hitting it. And, you know, is it a reps thing? Is Towns going to wake up one morning and just figure out that he knows how to play these pick and rolls? Is T going to wake up next month and decide he wants to not die on a screen and just fight through it and understand that? I don't know. So it's, to me, it starts with Towns, though. I've been happy with Wiggins' defense. I think his awareness is good. His off-ball awareness is much better. He's averaging the most steals of his career, if you want a positive in all this horrible Wiggins play. But, you know.
Are we learning, too, now that what projections are for players coming out of college is just...
We should have known that by now.
Yeah, I mean, it's because what do we hear about Wiggins when he was at Kansas? You know, when everybody thought, okay, he was going to be, you know, it's going to be him and Embiid, you know, they're going to be the top two picks, and Wiggins has all this defensive upside and all this stuff.
Offensive
and,
game will come in a few years.
Yeah. And, you know, we even heard it with Cat. You know, Cat's got defensive versatility. He's going to be able to defend multiple positions. Pick and roll defense has a chance to be really great. You know, rim protector, all this other stuff. And we're just
should we just
not
remember that those guys are doing those things against teenagers who are going to go on to be accountants and other things? Yeah. Like nothing against accountants, but you don't really need athleticism to be an accountant.
Well, one of I always said about Gorgie Jang, that was, Gorgie Jang at Louisville was always, you know, rim protector, defender, rebounder, all this stuff. And Gorgie's never been a rim protector in the NBA, never.
No,
you know, and that's not a knock on Gorgie, but it's just. It's amazing that we get all these projections from guys that are raw coming out of college.
Well, I think in the NBA too, you have more advanced offensive schemes because the players, you know, the better basketball IQ, they're more athletic, so you can do more with them. And same for the defensive end, they're going to be more complicated, so it's more difficult to learn. Like with Gorgie, we've seen he'll have some moments where you wonder what he's doing, but like you just have no idea what he's doing. And other moments, you're like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah.
So we just kind of see how that. It's not so easy, and there's not always a direct correlation between college success and NBA success. I think things like rebounding, things that require instinct, those typically tend to carry over. But things like rim protection at like the college level, when you're going against like 6'6", 6'7" centers, aren't really the same thing,
right? John, what's your assessment of Taj? Because I've always been like a fan of.
Choose your words carefully.
I mean, what has he brought to the table? Are you liking what you're seeing from him? What more can he do to maybe help Towns defensively? I mean, just what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think, you know, after Butler, he's the most valuable player on this team this year. He's been, I call him Mr. Clean because he cleans up all the messes on the Timberwolves. I love the guy. I think he's an outstanding signing for this team. I was not a big believer in the signing when they signed him. I thought $14 million was too much. I thought they needed to chase a wing. I still think that, you know, there are problems with having $28 million in Gorgie and Taj, obviously, in a league that has gotten so small. That's an issue, and they're going to have to figure that out. Most likely, you know, they're going to probably try to trade him.
Yeah.
I think Taj has been outstanding. His communication is something the Timberwolves really needed defensively. He's been a great rebounder. He kills it in first quarters. He's like one of the best first quarter scorers in the NBA. It's outstanding. He's got a tremendous relationship with Jimmy Butler. They're really tight. I don't know that I could ask anything more out of Gibson. I don't know that I could have expected anything more. I think he's just been great. My one fear is that... these 38-minute games, these 40-minute nights. I don't think as a 32-year-old...
I felt horrible for him in that Sixers game, man.
Yeah,
like, he's just end of the third quarter, and he's just
hands on his knees.
Out of it.
Yeah. He was sitting right in front of me, and it's the end of the third quarter, and I lean over to Britt Robson, and I'm just like, he doesn't have it. He's gone. He's gassed. He's got nothing left.
Yeah.
And that's where the criticisms of the minutes come in. So I do worry a little bit about Taj moving forward, and just, can he, you know, what does his production look like in game 60 or game 80 or the first round of the playoffs if we do get there?
And he's so critical.
He's been great.
The one guy where if he went down, aside from Jimmy Butler, I'd be like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I'd be worried. I'd be very, very worried because he's been that good in all regards for this team.
On the minutes thing,
we haven't talked about this much.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it at
no
all.
No one's talking about this.
Nobody's
is this
talking
a problem?
About, who cares about minutes?
Yeah.
It's the elephant in the room, I think, for the last few weeks, really since Belly went down with the injury and Tibbs shortened it to an 8-man rotation. I guess I've been kind of going back and forth on, rather, it's more so the minutes distribution versus, you know, an 8 or 9 or 10 man rotation. I just feel like, okay, if you're going to roll with 8 guys, the 3 that are coming off the bench need to play more than what they've been playing.
It's got to be closer to a 60-40 split at least.
So yeah. So you are like Mike D'Antoni guy. That's exactly what he's doing in Houston. They play 8 guys.
Yeah.
But it's like Bamute, Tucker, they play 25 minutes.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything different except, you know, I don't get it, because I see people say, oh, the Timberwolves bench is trash. It's terrible. It's garbage. Every single day. No, it's not.
They didn't
watch
last season. It's just
not used correctly, in my opinion. Gorgie is more than capable. He started all 82 games last year. I think the guy can play 25 minutes.
He was a starting power forward last year.
He hasn't missed a game since 2015.
Tyus Jones has improved in all regards. Definitely deserves 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Belly's hurt, but we all saw he was the NBA leader in true shooting percentage and effective field goal percentage. He was cashing everything from deep.
Shooting 57.8%.
And Tibbs constantly applauds his defensive effort, too. So, you know, Belly, hopefully he gets back soon enough here. But, and then you got Jamal Crawford, who, score alert, he comes out against Portland and he scores 16 in the fourth. And I know we're not going to get those performances every game, but Crawford is more than capable of playing 20 minutes, too. I wouldn't advocate for that many minutes because I don't think he's a great defender anymore.
Right.
But he's capable. And I think that would just help the starters just so much.
Well, and even with Crawford, yeah, he's 37 years old, but he's in phenomenal shape.
Yeah.
That guy takes
care
of
himself.
He's
a young 37.
Forever 21.
Yeah, and he's come off the bench his entire career. And he's one guy who's, you know, talked about wanting to play more minutes. And, I mean, that's kind of a thing that's bubbling kind of behind the surface.
Yeah, and you and I, Derek, we've been talking the last couple of weeks where we look at, you know, Taj will play 37, 38 minutes in a game. We're like, and then we'll look at Gorgie. Gorgie played 13, 14 or something. We're like, that should be a little bit closer together. There's no reason why Gorgie can't give them 20 to 26 minutes.
Taj doesn't even want to play that many minutes. He has told people that.
Yeah.
He wants to extend his career longer. And he's not going to do that with these kind
of
minutes.
Except after the Philly game where he's like, minutes are minutes. And it's like, that is such a diplomatic answer, and thank you for lying, but that's not how you feel.
Right.
Now, I'm curious what your thoughts are on my theory on Gorgie. Early in the season, he looked pretty poor. Like, he was struggling to adjust to a bench role again. Do you think he's the kind of guy that can play himself? He'll look better in more minutes, even if in lower minutes he doesn't look as good?
No question. Absolutely. Go look at Gorgie's box scores. Go look at his best games this year. He's played 24, 25, 26 minutes. Games against New Orleans when Carl got into foul trouble. His best games of the season.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
He seems like a guy who really needs the feel for the game.
He does.
The way to get the feel for it is to get in early and often.
Yeah, I think he's definitely that kind of player. Like, you need to get him the minutes because he just doesn't get into that groove in short stints. And, you know, something that's bothered me personally is if Gorgie makes one mistake, Tibbs pulls him.
Yeah.
And I just think that is terribly hard environment to play in. That they play tight. I think a lot of these bench guys play tight because they don't want to screw up.
They're so worried about screwing up.
I mean, he's a veteran player.
Yeah, it's an issue, and I hope it gets better moving forward. I'm happy that we've seen Marcus Georges Hunt start to get some minutes because it's so subtle, but just 5 minutes for him.
Yeah.
Jimmy played 35 minutes against Portland. Will the minutes police come out on Twitter if Jimmy plays 35 minutes?
No.
We won't see them. And it's funny, but if he plays 38 minutes, they will. They will be there.
Tom Thibodeau's a war criminal.
38 minutes.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of funny, though, with Jimmy, too? Like, Jimmy's playing basically the same amount of minutes this
year. Even under Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah, the last 2 years under Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody's looking at Fred Hoiberg and saying, you're playing Jimmy too many minutes.
This is malpractice.
Like,
right.
And, again, that's not letting Tibbs off the hook at all. But it is kind of funny. Like, it's like the narrative has just followed Tibbs, and it's completely forgotten about that Jimmy's been playing the same amount of minutes the last couple of years that he's been playing this year and that he was playing under Tibbs.
And it's like a perfect, it's a perfect storm too, because, hey, the Timberwolves, they're playing on ESPN against the Sixers, national televised game. Everybody's watching. So a lot of the national media that maybe is not watching a lot of the Timberwolves, the first time they get to take them in, Towns played 48 minutes. But of course, it doesn't even matter if it was in overtime. No one cares about that, right?
Right.
No one cares that Embiid played, I don't know how many minutes against OKC in that 3-0 thriller like last Friday. Embiid played like 44 minutes or something.
I think part of the problem...
We should rip that.
Was even right. In the Philly game, even though it was overtime, none of the Sixers played 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And although Embiid and Simmons would have hit 40,
yeah,
had the game not gotten away and it was pretty much over and Brett Brown could pull his guys with 2 or 3 minutes left. I think that was part of the problem, too.
Yeah.
I
still think it is an issue, though.
Oh, it is.
For sure. And for me, it's just more of, it's not individual minutes. Because I'm not as concerned about Towns playing 36, 37 minutes or Wiggins playing 36, 37 minutes as I am about Taj.
Yeah.
32-year-old Taj Gibson playing 37, 38 minutes.
Also, like, does Jeff Teague have to play 38 minutes when Tyus Jones has shown to be
right.
a very capable backup point guard?
There's no reason why Tyus shouldn't play at least, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah. So I think we got to look at, like, the Rockets, the way they're doing it.
Yeah.
I think it's a much smarter way of doing an 8-man rotation.
Jeff Teague is better than Tyus Jones. So, yeah, you probably want more of Jeff Teague than you do of Tyus Jones. But is Jeff Teague that much better than Tyus Jones to where he's playing 37 minutes and Tyus is playing 11?
No.
No.
No. And no. Tyus is a great facilitator. So yes. A lot of when we see the ball stick so much with Teague, you know, Tyus is just a great...
He's going to change it up.
The ball moves when he's on the floor. Everyone shares the wealth.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It just... Sometimes you just watch these games and you just say, man, just...
But it's funny, you can tell that they're listening because, you know, like they're reading what's out there, probably listening to the shows that are out there, because after that Philly game, we saw more Marcus George's Hunt.
Yep.
We saw more minutes for the bench guys. So, I mean, it is making a difference.
I just wonder, though, is Tibbs going to stick with it or if it's going to
just wait till the heat dies down?
Yeah, if he's just going to roll with this and he's just going to, like, kind of naturally go back to... Because this is, like, this is how he has always coached. Since his first year with the Bulls, it's always been like this. So it's like, okay, yeah, we'll they're getting on us about Marcus George's Hunt. He needs to play more. So we'll give him 7 minutes for these next few games and then slowly but surely he'll just kind of...
Fade away.
Fade off and next
Sip
thing you
Gator
know...
Or Shabazz Muhammad.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Marcus.
Let's talk about Shabazz for a second.
Okay.
What the heck is going on?
Yeah. He's terrible.
We can call it in year five, I think.
I mean...
I don't know if I feel bad for him, but...
He's a nice dude.
Yeah.
You want him to be good, but...
It is. But this is a business, too.
Yeah.
You know? And they're out there to win games, and... I think you said it to me plenty of times before. They put Shabazz on the court, and it's -4, -5 points before you can even snap your fingers. So he's not...
It's hard to watch.
No, I think it's actually a great thing that he's getting DMP'd every night because I think it's giving the Timberwolves a better chance at winning games. And it's an adjustment that we should tip our hats to Tibbs for, is to recognize that, you know, we can like Shabazz as a person and we can want him to succeed, but at this rate... He's killing your team when he's on the court.
He's not giving you anything right now.
I mean, his attitude has been excellent.
Yeah.
He's taken a lot of work into his body every offseason, making sure he's in the best shape possible, but he hasn't grown his game at all. He still doesn't defend. He doesn't rebound really well enough to justify putting him out there. even on the offensive end, people are always like, oh, he has that lefty jump hook. It's like, guys don't know how to defend left-handed hook shots from a 6'6 small forward. Please.
Also, it's 2017. If that's all you got, a lefty hook on the left block.
Yeah. That's the thing. If they go to defend it, he has no counter to it. He doesn't have a step back. He doesn't have, you know, a pump fake. That's it. Like, you've stopped Shabazz Muhammad. That's all the things he does.
Even if, and Derek, you've heard me say this multiple times, even if he was just a really solid knockdown three-point shooter,
he'd make $15 million a year.
He'd be playable. Mm-hmm. Even if he's still as bad as he is defensively. If
for 12 minutes a game?
If he's a capable three-point shooter, then you're like, okay, yeah, we'll play him 12, 13 minutes and he'll hit some shots for you. But he's like, if he can't do that,
he hasn't he's already shot bad well
defensively, then he's not giving you anything.
Yeah, he's a no three, no D. So it's like, how is that going to help you? Marcus Georges Hunt looks like a 3-and-D guy.
Which is what they really need right now.
Yeah, and I think he's, seriously, I'm not going to say like, oh, he, you know, they actually found a gem here, but I'm optimistic that Georges Hunt actually has the skills that we need on the wing, and that's why, you know, I've been beating the drum. A lot of people have been beating the drum for more Georges Hunt because I think he has some skills, and that's a criticism of Tibbs is we can't develop those guys. We can't see it unless you put it out there.
Yeah. Well, and the example that I use, and again, I'm not saying that this is definitely what he is going to become, but again, we didn't know who the hell Kent Bazemore was until we saw him come into a playoff game against the Spurs for the Warriors, and he made a couple plays, and you're like, who the hell is this Kent Bazemore guy?
Even Draymond Green looked like a fringe NBA player until Bogut got hurt. David Lee got hurt, and they had to start him. And now he's an all-star defensive player of the year candidate and winner, too.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Marcus Georges Hunt is definitely going to become Kent Bazemore, even though it would be nice if he did. But it's just we'll never know unless we see him and give him a chance to become that if he's going to.
Absolutely, and that's part of player development.
Yeah.
Then that's part of being a president of basketball operations and head coach is developing your young players.
Well, you got to find cheap talent too, especially if you're going to be capped out like that. You got to be able to hit on those late round picks, those undrafted guys, the G League guys.
You have to.
They're crucial. I mean, you just can't rely on being able to get guys on a discount or veteran minimum. You have to find talent with still some upside that can actually grow and improve over time.
And at this rate, can you guys even see a free agent, like a vet, signing here now with like all the evidence that's out there and these since Tibbs has taken over? I really can't.
Right.
It's something I'm starting to become pretty worried about because now when Wiggins, his max contract hits, then Towns' max contract hits, then you got to max out Jimmy.
Yeah.
Hopefully he stays.
You have to think about how do you fill out the rest of this bench? And by that time, if he continues at this rate, I don't see a lot of veterans saying, hey, Minnesota, that looks like a good spot for me.
Yeah. Because Jamal Crawford is, I mean, as excited as we are to see him play at 37 and play fairly well at 37, he is 37. And he's not.
The wall's not going to be here. Some point.
He's, in all likelihood, he's not going to be here 4 or 5 years from now.
No.
So somebody else is going to have to be there and have that role in some capacity.
Yeah, so that's another thing with the minutes is, you know, you decrease them because you got to the NBA it's a players league, man. They run everything and they all talk to each other and you got to recognize that. And the more the word gets put out there with, you know, how Tibbs is running things, if it's perceived to be negative in some of the players' minds that maybe come here, it's not going to help the team. You know, we had Omri Caspi last year, Lance Stevenson last year. I don't know. Did they have good experiences here? I would say probably not, but
well, look at George
I don't really
Hill.
Know for sure. But
George Hill decided that he was not going to play for Tom Thibodeau because he knows his reputation. I mean, yeah, like you said, these guys talk. I mean, they aren't just living in, you know, behind closed door here.
It's something to think about.
And I know he's a ways away from really making a huge impact, but I'm curious to see what Justin Patton becomes, because if they can get something out of him eventually, I don't know when it's going to be. It's certainly not going to be like tomorrow. Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be, but if they can get something positive out of him, then it probably makes it easier to move like a Gorgui Dieng and get, you know, a wing type of player that you really, really need right now. Not saying anything's going to happen tomorrow, but yeah, Justin Patton's another guy I'm looking at and saying, okay, if they can get something out of him, it'll be easier to part with Gorgui to really sort of balance the roster.
Here's the other thing. They lose their first round pick to Atlanta if they make the playoffs this year or next year.
Yeah.
So that's just another avenue for adding young talent that they won't have as long as they're successful, which is kind of the catch-22. We want them to be successful, but then they won't have that pick.
And you know how you help that? You'd make something out of this OKC pick.
Yeah.
Wherever it lands, it might. I mean, right now it's looking like it's probably going to be like the 16th pick or whatever. But even if it's.
Isn't it lottery protected, though? Isn't that what they want?
Yeah, we need them to make the playoffs. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm convinced they're going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
They'll figure it out. They'll hit a good stretch of play.
But rather that's the 16th pick because OKC was like the 8th seed, or if it's the 26th pick because they turned around and ended up winning 50 games, something's got to come out of that. They've got to get something out of that. Rather it's actually using that pick to draft a guy or trading it to get something that becomes a guy for you. But they've got to be able to hit on the assets that they have.
Yeah, that's how you sustain success over a long period of time, like these teams, like, you know, San Antonio. But in terms of Patton, I'm excited to see what he has. He's looked good in the D League. Not that that's translatable or transferable to the NBA, but he looks good. He seems to run the court really well. He's got a three-point shot. He seems like a very agile big that could potentially play next to Towns. And to your point, it would allow you to potentially move Dieng. I think that cap number is going to be really hard to move.
Yes.
Unless you take back another a bad contract.
Or you attach that pick.
Or you attach the OKC pick or maybe a future pick. Cole Aldrich has his contract is a player or a team option, excuse me. So it's like $7 million. So I could see them. That would be a good asset for a team to take on that would just say, you know, we're not keeping Aldridge. Let's save $7 million in the summer. So in terms of trades, I probably would keep my eye on Aldridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, it's they've got some needs and they've got some things that they got to work on. But, hey, they're in first place, too. So
not everything is horrible, right?
The sky is not falling. It's just... It's just kind of hanging a little bit.
It's just funny how they can lose a game like they did against Phoenix, one that they should have won without Devin Booker.
Yeah.
But they win the game they should have lost against Portland when they played like crap until Jamal Crawford went off and the energy just went up. I can't figure this team out.
I said it to Royce the other day. I said, this team, so many times they will lose a game and you're like, how the hell did they lose that game? And then they'll turn around and win a game and you say, how the hell did they win that game?
They make no sense. Don't try to make sense of it.
They make no sense.
Every time you think you're going to say, the Wolves should win tonight, take back those words because they haven't proven that that's the case.
The Wolves will play basketball tonight. Outcome to be determined.
Anything can happen with these Wolves.
Yes.
That's probably why people are frustrated. I keep saying, yes, they're frustrating. Yes, they're annoying at times. But at the end of the day, like, what did you expect with all these new faces, you know, coming together? I think most level-headed people expected it to take a little bit of time with the level of, it's hard to have a pecking order immediately. You know, we've seen now Jimmy is now like, okay, he's the number one guy now. You know, it's flushed out little bit. But
when LeBron came back, they started, 18 and 19? It took them 40 games to get their act together.
Yeah, the Heatles didn't just come together. Right
Not now. Even like the KG Celtics, they were good right away, but that is, you know, by far the exception and not the rule.
Well, and you remember the KG Celtics, they were good right away, but then they got to the playoffs, and remember those first two rounds, they went 7.
Yeah.
Even as the number one seed with 8-seeded Atlanta pushed them to 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was wondering, what's wrong with them? What's going on type of thing? So
I'm trusting the process right now, but I get why people are frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's easy too sometimes to, when you get so caught up in your own team that you forget to like look around at the rest of the league. Like in some ways, like Golden State they've set the bar so high to the point where if you don't look like them, oh my God, it's just, you've got this wrong with you and you're this, you need to work on this. You got to get better at that. And you're terrible at this. It's like, no, there's some good teams in the league. It's just you have
you can win without having three of the greatest shooters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody's got issues. Everybody's got problems except for...
The Warriors aren't even in first place in the West. The Rockets are.
How good are the Rockets right now? Oh, my gosh.
They're really good. You know why? Because CP3 or Harden is always on the floor.
Yeah.
One of them, they've always got a Hall of Fame guy playing
what
point guard.
What a backcourt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've got... The thing, too, is I was talking with a buddy of mine. And I said, you know, Houston's looking really good right now. He's like, wow, they... You know, they're still bad on defense. It's like, well,
no, they're not.
This is different. This is not like that's just kind of falling back on the well, Mike D'Antoni's teams in the past have always been bad defensively, mm-hmm. but it's different now.
They can always keep Mabah Mute or PJ Tucker
mm-hmm. or Trevor
on the court.
Yeah.
And Clint Capella has just been incredible this season for them too.
Yeah, they've got so many different guys that you can just, and John, like you said, they're only playing with eight guys, but all of those guys are playing like significant minutes, and they're just mm-hmm.
and that goes without mentioning Eric Gordon too. It's amazing how far into that conversation you can get without Eric Gordon.
Yeah, the Rockets are pretty good. The Warriors are pretty good, and you know what? The Wolves are fine too. Well, I shouldn't say they're fine, but
they're probably fine.
They're good. They're gonna make the playoffs. Target Center is going to be full in April. It's going to be fun. It'll be a little aggravating along the way.
Just enjoy Jimmy Butler.
Yes. You would not believe how many texts that Derek and I have had back and forth. Like, Jimmy's incredible. And that'll just be it. John, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll have to have you on again soon here.
For sure.
Appreciate it. John Meyer from Canis Hoopus. Give him a follow. What's your Twitter handle?
The Daily Wolf.
Yes, give him a follow there. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast at podcast1.com, on iTunes, and of course 1500ESPN.com. Enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.